Peter in the morning, only on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Ryan Pinder in the morning, brought to you by Glenmore Audi. The Land of Quattro sales event is on. Get lease and finance rates from 0.9% and Quattro bonus up to $4,000. Visit glenmoreaudi.com.
Very busy hour coming up for you on your Monday. It is Pinder in the morning, brought to you by Glenmore Audi. My name is Will Nault, filling in for Ryan Pinder for the next week. Boomer back next Tuesday, and Ryan sitting in Boomer's chair for the next week and change. Lots to do this hour. I mentioned it's a very busy hour, and we got a very special guest coming up to close out the hour, a new one. As if you need some help in the fantasy football world, you might want to tune in at 9:45. Pat Mayo from the Fantasy Sports Network will join me, and we will double take on some Flames. Coming up in just a second, the radio voice of the team is Derek Wills. He'll join me to chat some Calgary Flames in the road trip. And at 9:25, we'll chat with Darren Haynes. He talked to me earlier, and he said, I'm going to try and talk some fans off the ledge. It might not be as cloudy and dark and gray as it may seem after a pretty bad road trip where the Flames end up with just two of a possible 8 points. Well, let's kick off the show with Derek Wills.
The Flames Insider, brought to you by Varsity Chrysler. It's the $2 million price drop. 0% is here today, but maybe gone tomorrow. Red Hot Ram started at $23,900 and Grand Caravans for payments of only $65. VarsityChrysler.com.
Jay's big, fat, juicy fingers have disconnected us from the guest. We'll get him back on in just a second as we reconnect with Derek Wills. But two of a possible 8 points for the Flames. They get outscored 16-5 on the road trip. And we've got Mr. Wills back on the phone. Good morning, Willsy. Not a good road trip for the Flames. Outscored 16-5. Closed things out by getting outscored 9-1 in Southern California. We talked about it on Friday. Maybe not the worst time to go in Southern California against these two teams, but it turns out that wasn't the case. Not a good weekend for the Calgary Flames.
No, I mean, when you look at the four-game road trip, Will, they played two good games, one bad game, and one average game where they just weren't good enough, and that game was yesterday. I thought they were a lot better against the Ducks than they were against the Kings. I thought their defensive zone coverage was actually pretty good, and you know, 5-on-5, they were pretty good, but special teams is really, really hurting this club right now, and you know, they fall behind 1-0 early, battle back, make it 1-1, and I thought the Flames were doing some good things in the second half of the first period and early in the second, and then Dougie Hamilton has a rough shift, kind of trips over himself, falls face first into the glass. It seemed to make him mad, and then he takes a bad penalty right after that, and the Ducks score a power play goal, take a 2-1 lead, and don't look back. So tough road trip for the team for sure, and now they've got 3 days to sort things out before they get back on the ice to start off a short two-game homestand.
Derek, I'm curious. We kind of kicked this around this morning, and I wonder where you are on it, because they lose to L.A. on Saturday 5-0, and I think that a lot of people were anticipating quite the bounce back a Sunday in Anaheim, and the first half of the first period wasn't terrible, but which one are you more concerned with, the 5-0 loss on Saturday or the lack of bounce back with a 4-1 loss on Sunday?
Oh, for sure the 5-0 loss on Saturday, Will. I mean, they just were not ready to play in that game against the Kings, and they weren't ready to play the type of games that that they knew the Kings were going to play, and that is a heavy game. And the Kings are the heaviest team in the league. Glenn Gullitson said that going into that game, and the Flames just weren't ready to win battles, and they just didn't have a high enough compete level in that game on Saturday night. And quite frankly, I think the final score was probably flattering. I think if not for the work of Brian Elliott, it could have been worse than 5-0. And I don't think they played a bad game yesterday, Will. I just don't think they generated enough offensively. When the Ducks had opportunities, they capitalized on them. When the Flames did, they didn't. Pat Steinberg sent out a tweet after the game. I think he had the Ducks with one more scoring chance overall and with one more scoring chance at even strength. So it's not like the Flames were terrible defensively. They didn't give a ton up. They just didn't create a lot at the other end. And they're going to have to work on that and special teams for sure at practice this week.
Care to opine on the 24 consecutive losses?
Not really. I mean, it's a new group, right? They've got one holdover on the coaching staff and Martin Gélinas, who is a player the last time the Flames won at Honda Center in Anaheim. But they've got a new head coach. They've got two new assistant coaches. They've got a bunch of new guys in that dressing room. So, sure, there are a bunch of guys who have been a part of a lot of those losses at Honda Center. But they've got a bunch of new guys as well. As a matter of fact, I had a chat with Brett Kulak yesterday, which aired on our pregame show. He had just turned 10 years old the last time the Flames won at Honda Center. So, you know, he doesn't know about this long losing streak. And, you know, I asked him and a bunch of other players, and it's not something they think about or talk about. The bottom line is the Ducks are a good team. It's always tougher to win on the road in this league, and the Flames got beat by a better team yesterday, and they're going to have to figure things out at home here before they head on another long road trip.
Derek Wills, the radio voice of the Calgary Flames, our guest here on Pinder in the Morning. My name is Will Nault, filling in for Ryan this week. And Derek, I guess the next point we'll go to is special teams. And we saw a little bit of life last week when we were talking about those games in Chicago and St. Louis, and then even a little bit at home against Ottawa. But the penalty power play, is sitting at 8.3%. I went 0 for 2 last night in Anaheim. What are we seeing with the power play right now? Or not seeing, I guess.
Yeah, well, we're not seeing a lot of zone time. I think that's one of the big concerns, Will. It starts on faceoffs, and strangely, if you do take a look at the power play faceoff numbers, the Flames have won well over 50% of their draws, but even though you win a faceoff, doesn't mean you necessarily end up with possession of the puck. So winning a faceoff is more than just winning the actual draw. You've got to maintain possession, and the Flames haven't done a great job of that. So when you either win a face-off and lose the puck right away, or lose a face-off, the team shoots it down the ice, and you know there's 15 or 20 seconds off the clock. And it also means you got to get back into the offensive zone. You have that advantage when you start the power play. You start in the offensive zone, but if you have to chase it back into your end, now you've got to gain that offensive blue line again, and that's been a challenge for the Flames as well. And just things aren't clicking right now. I think that's the best way to put it. And a big part of it, obviously, has been the struggles of Johnny Gaudreau and Sean Monahan. And I think we saw a little progress from both of those guys yesterday. So hopefully they're going to start trending in the right direction here. And I think once those two guys find their offensive game again, then that's certainly going to help the power play. I actually think the second unit power play, Will, has been more effective than the first unit power play. And a big part of that has been Matthew Tkachuk. He's going to the front of his opponent's net, and he's standing there. He doesn't care if he takes a beating, if guys are, you know, all over him, he'll go to the tough areas and stay there. And I think the Flames are doing a better job with their second unit power play, getting a body to the front of the net and Tkachuk, and getting pucks to the net. And that's something the first unit power play has struggled to do, whether it be point shots or shots from the wall or from the slot, just not getting enough shots through to the goaltender. So I'm sure that'll be a focal point of practice this week.
Crazy what's going on right now in terms of special teams, and certainly you were waiting for Gaudreau and Monahan to break out of this, whatever you want to call it, slump, gaze, whatever it is. I mean, they are not playing up to their speed, and we talked to Brian Burke in studio this morning, and he said, look, you know, this, I'm not here to call anybody's names or call anybody out, but our top players are not being our top players. And I think that, you know, Derek, we can talk about the power play till we're blue in the face. We can talk about the turnovers and the goaltending. But if this team doesn't get more from their stars, I don't know if we're talking about a lot of good results.
You're right. And I mean, you've got to give a lot of credit to the bottom three lines, if you want to call them that. And I hesitate to call them that, Will, because they haven't played like bottom three lines. Yeah. I mean, the Flames' nine forwards playing on, I'll put it this way, playing on the Bennett, Backlund, and Stajan lines have been really good for the most part. But any team in this league, I think, would agree if your top line or the line that's supposed to be your top line, or in other words, the Monahan line, isn't playing well on a consistent basis, it's going to make it tough to win. So I think if they can get that line going, they're going to be just fine. And I think it goes beyond just the forwards, Will. I think they need more from their top defensemen as well. Talked about that penalty that Dougie Hamilton took yesterday that resulted in a power play goal against. Actually, I've liked Dougie's game of late. Didn't have a great game yesterday, but liked them earlier on the road trip. But even their top pairing. I mean, Mark Giordano and TJ Brody are back together again, and I think they've done a good job defensively. But offensively, let me ask you, do you think they're as dynamic this season as they have been in past seasons?
No. I can certainly count more times than I've ever been able to count the last 2 years, where we're sitting in the press box in home games and we discuss things in the intermission, and you know, how many times have we had conversations about Gaudreau getting hit in open ice, which never usually happens, and they just seem to be out of sync, and I don't know if it's squeezing it or what it is, and you know, certainly sometimes when you get a big contract, you feel you have to earn it and get more points every year. I don't know what it is, but yeah, they certainly have not been clicking like we've seen in the past, and I know that they got, you know, they connected on that goal last night in Anaheim, and they looked like a pair there for a second, but they certainly don't seem to be on the same page, and I don't know how that happens, but the fact that we're sitting here with more than 10 games played and nothing has changed, it's starting to lean towards a little bit of worrisome, right?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. You have to be worried at this point. I mean, and we're not 3 games into the season or 7 games into the season. You know, we're into November now, and those guys have to start playing better. And they know it. I mean, they would admit it themselves. I don't think you'd have to, you know, to pry that answer out of them with a crowbar. They know that they have to be better. And, you know, they're good players. Whether we're talking about Sean Monahan or Johnny Gaudreau or Mark Giordano or TJ Brody or Dougie Hamilton, these guys are proven stars, and in some cases, superstars in the National Hockey League. Sooner or later, they're going to find their game. Is it taking longer than they thought it would, than I thought it would, than you thought it would, than just about everybody thought it would? Absolutely it is. But as long as they can stay relatively healthy, and they've finally been bitten by the injury bug a couple of times here, and don't kid yourself, losing Chris Versteeg and Lance Boma has hurt this hockey team. Mm. Those were depth guys who were playing really, really well, and they certainly missed them in the last 2 games in Versteeg's case and last game in Boma's case. But, you know, if the depth guys can continue playing as well as they're playing, and the team's top guys can start playing better, I think this team's going to turn their season around. And, I mean, it is still relatively early. There's nobody really running away with playoff spots of the Western Conference, so they can get back into it with probably just a short little winning streak here. And the other thing that I think has to give fans some hope here, Will, 2 years ago, right, when the Flames made the Stanley Cup playoffs, and they did so despite having terrible possession numbers, everybody kept saying, okay, their possession numbers are awful, so winning is not sustainable. Well, if you take a look at the Flames' possession numbers this year, much better than they were the last couple of years. So doesn't that mean that if they keep playing the way they are, and hopefully even better than they have been, that losing isn't sustainable?
Yeah, but at the same time, you're waiting for something to change, but you're right. I mean, something's got to give here, and you know, if they continue to have good possession numbers and generate offense, I know they didn't generate a lot over the weekend, but that's going to lead to some good things. And I think right now the biggest thing killing this team is turnovers and you know, the transition game where they can't get back enough and allow those odd man rushes where you give your goaltender no chance. It doesn't matter who you have in net, you're giving up constant 3-on-2s. It's not really going to lead to a lot of success. Last couple for you. The first one, we saw them broken up Saturday in LA partly because of injury, but are we at the point where we have to split up Monahan and Gaudreau? Where are you on that conversation?
Well, that was a one-game experiment, and I think it probably came a little quicker than it normally would have because of the injury to Versteeg. So that kind of threw things out of whack. So Glenn Gulletson decided to split up Monahan and Gaudreau for one game, did leave them together on the first unit power play, which is important to note, but then put them back together again, and maybe that had something to do with the injury to Lance Boma in that loss versus the Kings on Saturday. But I actually thought that the two of them together had their best game in a while last night. Were they great? No. But they did hook up on a goal as Monahan gave the puck to Gaudreau in front of the net, and I thought his one-timer went directly in, but upon further review, it actually bounced off the glove of Alex Chiasson before going by Jonathan Bernier. And so that certainly was a good sign that those guys actually were able to hook up and score a goal for the team yesterday. And we saw some vintage Johnny hockey at moments in last night's game as, you know, he used his speed to his advantage. I thought he was a lot harder to knock off the puck. And more importantly, and I think this is important to note, I think he was a lot better without the puck yesterday. And that's something that's made him really dangerous in his first couple of seasons, Will, is that, you know, he can use his speed and his smarts to pickpocket guys, to force them to make bad decisions with some back pressure coming back into his zone. And we didn't see that from start to finish from Johnny Gaudreau last night, but we did see it at times. So hopefully, and my fingers are crossed, and I know his are and the teams are and the fans are, but hopefully that is a sign of more of that to come.
Derek, as always, appreciate your time. We'll catch up again tomorrow. Flames back in action Thursday against Dallas and the Rangers on Saturday. Thanks for this, man.
All right, thanks, Will. Have a good one.
The Flames Insider, brought to you by Varsity Chrysler. It's the $2 million price drop. Varsity Chrysler has 336 new 2016 vehicles reduced by over $2 million. 0% is here today, but may be gone tomorrow. VarsityChrysler.com.
Will's every morning at 9:05, brought to you by Varsity Chrysler. And the Flames back in action at home on Thursday against Dallas and Saturday night against the Rangers. If you like music, we've got a special announcement around the corner. Stay tuned and a chance for you to win a pair of tickets. But I'm not going to tell you what and where until we get back. Stay tuned. Sportsnet 960 The Fan returns with a special announcement around the corner. It's Pinder in the Morning, brought to you by Glenmore Audi. I'm Will Nault, and this is Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Get connected. Text 960-960 to get your voice heard. Ryan Pinder in the Morning on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Ryan Pinder in the Morning, brought to you by Glenmore Audi. The Land of Quattro sales event is on. Get lease and finance rates from 0.9% and Quattro bonus up to $4,000. Visit GlenmoreAudi.com.
.9:26 on your Monday morning. It is Pinder in the Morning, brought to you by Glenmore Audi. My name is Will Nault, filling in for Ryan this week. I teased it before the break. If you are a big fan of rock music, you might want to be by your computer on Friday, November 11th, as tickets will go on sale to the public on Friday. Ticketmaster.ca where you can get them. But Jay, the Red Hot Chili Peppers are coming to Calgary May 29th, 2017 at the Scotiabank Saddledome. If you are a big fan of Red Hot Chili Peppers, you want to go. Well, I've got two tickets here for you. Give us a text, 960-960 on your mobile phone. Here's the deal. Your first and last name must be on the text at 960-960. The first person to tell me which world tour was here from the Chili Peppers on November 17th, 2012. What was the name of the world tour from the Chili Peppers that was in town November 19th, 2012? You could be going to the Chili Peppers on May 29th. We'll let those texts come in. I will decide a winner and pick the first one who comes in with the correct answer and their first and last name on the text coming up in a little bit later before we hit the commercial break around 9:40. We'll go down the South Street Burger Guest Hotline, and I don't know if he is a Chili Peppers fan, but Darren Haynes from flamesfrom80feet.ca joins us right now. Good morning, Darren.
Hey, you know what? My wife is a huge Red Hot Chili Peppers fan in the early days of the Red Hot Chili Peppers. I'm not sure about today's era, but she used to be.
Well, they are coming back to Calgary on May 29th. Tickets go on sale on Friday. Should be a lot of fun. I hear they're great live. So if you're looking for something to do next May, tickets on sale Friday. Darren, well, the Flames, well, they're coming back home on Thursday. And maybe that's the right answer because a road trip didn't go ideal. Two out of a possible 8 points. Outscored 16-5, and they closed things out with a lackluster performance on Saturday and Sunday in Southern California, being outscored 9-1. Overall, summation of the road trip, what did you see over those four games?
Well, you know, I think there's, you know, you can paint a very black and white picture as you've just done, but I think what you cannot forget is these guys, I think, were a better team than Chicago for two periods of that loss. I think they're they're right there with Anaheim over two periods last night. They beat San Jose. I mean, what's the realistic expectation going into a road trip like that is what I ask. And I think if you see your team, and speaking generically, as a contending Stanley Cup threat, a kind of a division leading type of team, well, then you want to go 500 on that road trip. But if you're a bubble playoff team and you're going into Chicago and into those three California buildings, like, what's a realistic expectation? Is it two wins? You expect to go 500? I mean, I think even that is probably, I mean, they probably, I'm sure you'd love that, but is that realistic? So there are things that happen on that road trip that are things that you can point to as some positive signs. There's certainly a repeat of some of the problem areas, but I don't think it was as bad as some people are making it out to be, and as it sounds on paper when you go through the final scores, because that Chicago game got away. It was 1-1. They give up a power play goal. Then they kind of open it up in the third, and then they open it up, and that one got away for sure. And the Anaheim game, again, they battle back. They're right in that game. It's 1-1. Again, the penalty kill lets them down, and and Anaheim can lock a game down pretty good, and that's what they did. So, I mean, and you went in and beat the Stanley Cup finalists in San Jose in your other game. So the LA game was obviously brutal, and no one's going to kind of try and put lipstick on that one. But generally speaking, I mean, I think it could have been worse. I think to get 2 points, they needed more. I get that because of the way they started the season. But I don't think it's as bad and I don't buy that it's as bad as some people are making it out to be.
Well, it's funny because there's a lot of people angry this morning, and rightly so. If you're a Flames fan, you're pretty frustrated with how things went. But the poll question that we had all last week at sportsnet.ca/960 goes to your point about realistic expectations for this trip. A 4-game road trip with the Flames and the stops in Chicago, San Jose, LA, and Anaheim. The question was, how many points do they come home with? And 41.5% of people answered 0 to 2 points. So I don't know if obviously you're frustrated this morning, but as you mentioned, if you look at it kind of glass half full, I think you're frustrated, but the fact they got one win is okay. Obviously, this is a results-based business, and people have the right to be angry. But as you mentioned, if you look at it with the expectations heading in, I don't know if it's a massive disappointment. Obviously, the results are not good. But as you mentioned, expectations, I think, play a huge part in this.
Yeah, and I think it's a theme for the season, Will. I put out a survey last night, and I'm just checking it right now. It's close to 600 people have weighed in, and I asked them, realistically, looking at the schedule right now, how many games should the team have won? And I pointed out that 11 of the 14 opponents are in playoff spots right now. And 50% said 8 or more wins. If I go back over the 14 games, I come up with, if I was to put an objective hat on and just looking at it, I come up with maybe 6 wins. Maybe they should be at 6. To be a real surprising start, maybe 7, but they have played a lot of tough teams, and I think that has also kind of been lost in this kind of angst, the daily angst with the way I think the expectations may be a little bit too high, and who's to blame on that? I think with all the summer changes, I think fair enough, people were expecting Calgary to be a lot better, but a lot of other teams are also better. In particular, you look at Edmonton, they beat Calgary twice. Edmonton, I don't think those two losses, if you look at them now, are nearly as scarring as it felt like in the moment, because Edmonton has gone out and beaten a lot of other good teams too. So I think that's the theme for the season, is maybe the expectations were just too high.
Yeah, and Darren Haynes, by the way, is our guest, Flames from 80feet.ca, down the South Street Burger guest hotline. I don't know if, certainly the expectations were high, and rightly so, looking at this team on paper, and I don't know what the realistic number is for in terms of players getting a system and getting acclimated to a new coach, but I believe you've got some things to maybe counter all the fire the coach talk going out there right now.
Well, and this is not a new article, I wrote it 2 weeks ago, but I think it's very still valid, and I went over coaches that have inherited new teams and how long it took them to kind of turn the corner. So example A, Glenn Gullitson. So 14 games, 5 wins. So let me just kind of read you off some of the other list. Mike Sullivan, when he took over in Pittsburgh, 6 wins in his first 17 games. Dave Haxtell, John Cooper last year, Philadelphia and Tampa Bay, or Cooper was obviously a couple years ago, but when Cooper took over, he won 5 of his first 16. Haxtell, 5 of his first 16. Peter DeBoer, when he took over in San Jose, a very good team last year, 7 wins in his first 15. Lindy Ruff, when he took over a good Dallas team, 5 wins in his first 13. Barry Trotz only had 7 wins in his first 17 games with a very good Washington team. So Gullitson's he's right in the pocket with all those other guys in terms of that transition period. And this article is about 2 weeks old, and I looked at that kind of curve and when teams kind of settled in, and it's always kind of in between this 14, it's more about 16 or 17 games is kind of the medium, if you will, the median of when teams kind of turn the corner. So that's not to predict that that's going to happen here, but it certainly could happen because history will suggest that that's kind of, it's taken that long. It's taken 4 to 6 weeks for the new coach to kind of get his team going the way he wants to go. And the other thing that, if I was to put a little sunshine on kind of a dark day, or it's at least a dark, cloudy day in Kelowna, where I am this morning, is Calgary's had get this, and we're almost, what, 4 weeks into the start of the season? Guess how many practices they've had? Not talking game day skates, just practices. Guess how many?
4 weeks. I'm going to go with seven.
Seven is correct. So they've played 14 games, more than anyone in the league. Calgary leads the league with 14 games played. They've had seven practices. Over the next 7 days, they'll have five. So they have not really had a long time to get this group of players, because I'm talking about going back to the start of the season,
sure.
Because you know what? You have to go back there and not beyond to include a Johnny Gaudreau, to include a Sean Monahan at full strength, right? So I think, you know, what you want to do is you want to step back. You know, people can opine away. Like, it doesn't matter to me, but I want to see what this team looks like after they've had this kind of week of condensed opportunity to practice and to kind of cement some of these things that they're trying to work on, and often trying to work on in very small bursts because of the very busyness of the schedule.
Yeah, and just to play devil's advocate for a sec, I certainly understand that argument, and the examples you laid are perfect because all those coaches are terrific coaches. But at some point here, because, you know, we are approaching that 20-game mark, as you mentioned, we're going to learn a lot about this team over the next week or so. That excuse, I don't know what to call it, an excuse, but that rope, I guess, is getting a little shorter, and I don't know if there's much to grab onto here if we go another week and a half and we haven't really seen a lot of progress, right?
Right, but let's be honest, like, the players, the better, and I mean, if you look at the seasons that some of the star players are having, they have not been very good. And there seems to be a school of thought there that that's the coach's fault, that the players aren't engaged or they aren't buying into the system or whatever. But I think the players have to wear a majority of that. I mean, you know, you just look at the game last night, the first game, the first goal that Anaheim gets. Like, it's just a brutal giveaway by Yoki Packer, just a soft bank pass off the boards, picked off, it's in the net. Hamilton takes a bad penalty, which I will again point out to is another issue, discipline, okay? These guys are leading the league in penalties per game in terms of putting the other team on the power play. Okay, that is a team that's not being disciplined. That's why coaches had to bench some guys. And when you don't have a very PK and you have a very undisciplined, you're taking sloppy, poor penalties, then you're going to be in trouble, right? So again, if they can clean that up and get a little more discipline in their game, that's going to go a long way, and just put less onus on that PK. You know, so there are things that are within control, but, you know, more than anything, if I was to point to anything, it definitely is those better players. Johnny Gaudreau has to be better. He is dead last in the league in plus minus with minus 11, 663rd. I know plus minus is a stat that you can pick apart, but that is not a good number. Everyone, regardless of how they view plus minus, can know. And that kind of confirms what we've seen. He's had a poor year. And you know what? He showed up just in time for the start of the season. And you can, you know, who do you want to blame for that timing? You know, you can go a different ways on that. But the bottom line is he has just, you know, like, he hasn't been good. And so you look at, well, how come the power play hasn't been very good? Well, your star player hasn't been very good, and that's going to be a big factor. Yeah. And that's one other thing I'll just point out is the special teams. You know, the coach getting a lot of blame for the special teams, and I get that. But at what point do we look at the personnel? Because the special teams were very poor last year, and they had a different coach. So the coaches have changed. The personnel has stayed the same, with the exception of adding in, like, a Troy Brower on the first unit.
Sure.
So at what point is it maybe the players aren't performing on the power play? So I think you just have to look. There's a lot of, and I'm not here to be a Glenn Gullitzen apologist, but I really think that we're still a little early. I think Will's brought up a good point when he's talking about the possession stats and how poor possession is not sustainable to winning, just like and they've been better in those areas. So there are signs there that the process is maybe better than what the results are right now. And I point to the Chicago game in particular, where I thought they outplayed Chicago, but they lost. So, you know, that's kind of where we're at. So there are some things to look for. There's some reasons not to be on the ledge, but by no means does that mean, you know, like they need to actually then turn things around. Like, there's opportunity there, but they still need to execute it.
Hainsey, it's been fun. Enjoy the chats, and certainly it is early still, but as I mentioned before, that rope might be getting shorter, and I think, you know, certainly in the next couple of weeks, as we approach that American Thanksgiving date, that infamous Peter Maher old adage about, you know, where teams are at the American Thanksgiving mark is a good indication of where you might finish the year. This team's got a lot of work to do, not a lot of home games this month. We'll wait and see what happens, but thanks as always for your time.
Okay, cheers, bud.
Darren Haynes, flamesfrom80feet.ca is the website. You can follow him out on Twitter at Darren W. Haynes. He joins us down the South Street Burger Guest Hotline. Enjoy flame grilled burgers paired with local craft beer. You can visit their new location, now open in East Hill, 17th Ave Southeast, and Stony Trail. Tons of answers when it comes to the Red Hot Chili Peppers trivia question. And yes, they were here November 19th, 2012. The tour was called I'm With You. And our winner today is Taylor. Taylor is going to the Red Hot Chili Peppers in May. You'll get in contact from our promotions department. Congratulations to Taylor. Tons of answers. Unfortunately, only one can be right. And that was the first one that came in. Taylor is our winner today. Somebody lost by 3 seconds. That's how fast you got to be, Jay. You lose by 3 seconds and you don't get the tickets.
And don't live in Lethbridge because we're not going to mail them to you.
That's right. That's right. You have to kind of live in Calgary or find a way to get here to pick up the tickets because we do not mail winnings, as we found out this morning. So that's where it is, and we'll take a break, come back. We got a new guest to introduce you to. Is if you need some help in your fantasy football pool, you might want to tune in next. Pat Mayo from the Fantasy Sports Network will wrap the show up. It is Pinder in the Morning, brought to you by Glenmore Audi. I'm Will Nault, and this is Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Ryan Pinder in the Morning, only on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Ryan Pinder in the Morning, brought to you by Glenmore Audi. The Land of Quattro sales event is on. Get lease and finance rates from 0.9% and Quattro bonus up to $4,000. Visit glenmoreaudi.com.
It is Pinder in the Morning, brought to you by Glenmore Audi. My name is Will Nault, filling in for Ryan Pinder all week. I'm very excited about this as we close out the show with a new guest. You'll be hearing him every Monday right here on Sportsnet 9 at 60 The Fan at 9:45 in the morning. It is Pat Mayo from the Fantasy Sports Network. You can follow him on Twitter at the PME. Good morning, Pat. How are you?
I thought you said you were playing Tinder in the Morning. Hey, that Tinder in the Morning is not always the best move. People aren't really into it like they would be at, like, you know, midnight or 1 a.m.
Yeah, it's a weird title. I will give you that. It's yeah. not my title. Is I am filling in for the one and only Ryan Pinder. But pleasure to have you on, Pat. And I guess we can start with your thoughts on yesterday. What stuck out to you about week number 9?
It just how much I think that Oakland is so good at making me look so stupid for not believing. Like, Denver's defense is obviously beat up a bit, but Oakland last night exposed how you can really go at Denver's defense. You can run it up the gut on them. I mean, their pass defense is still legit, probably the best in football, especially when Tlaib ends up coming back. Mm-hmm. But if teams can start finding these weak spots in Denver's defense, they have no offense. Trevor Siemian, train wreck right now. And just the discipline that Oakland showed on the other side of the ball. When we think of Oakland, we think of that game even 2 weeks ago against Tampa, where they commit over 20 penalties and they're going to play themselves out of games. I think it was just a really impressive performance from the Raiders, and not something I called at the beginning of the year, put it that way.
Yeah, and it's funny because Latavius Murray was a guy who was averaging around 40 yards a game heading into that one last night, and he rushes over for over 100 yards and 3 touchdowns, all of them from 1 yard out. But they're, you know, they're creating quite the monster in that Oakland backfield. Jalen Richard is a pretty explosive runner as well. What did you make of the Oakland backfield, and more importantly, what does this tell us about Latavius Murray perhaps moving forward?
Well, I mean, I tend to look at this thing from a fantasy football point of view, and this would be the perfect time to sell high on Latavius Murray.
Yep.
He played 43 snaps last night. That was over 50% of the backfield. He had not been getting close to that number anywhere in the past 5 games. Now, someone could argue, hey, this is just turning it on. He scored 3 touchdowns. Of course they're going to play Latavius Murray, but it seems like they do want to go with a 3-man rotation. And frankly, that's probably more effective. When you look at it, Latavius Murray is a bit bruising. He's weirdly enough the best pass catcher of the three, despite the fact that you'd really think it was DeAndre Washington, but not. He's their best goal line back, but like, Richard is fast.
Yeah.
He's going to open space and he can fly. Same as DeAndre Washington. He's sort of a combo in between. He can break these tackles and you're like, man, this guy's pretty tiny. How is he breaking these tackles? Then all of a sudden you have Jimmy's Olawale coming out to get those plunging 1 yard. We didn't see him last night, but he's normally like their short yardage specialist. So it's just kind of crazy. But that offensive line is so good. Oakland's done a really good job of building up pieces of their team to make them sort of incredible. This offensive line is one of the best in football. The receiving core, one of the best in football. The linebackers, one of the best in football. Unfortunately, they do have problems in the secondary on the defensive line that when they eventually end up beating the Patriots, if that's somewhere where they go, it's going to be a bit problematic.
Pat Mayo is our guest from the Fantasy Sports Network down the South Street Burger guest hotline, and he'll join us every Monday going forward to chat some NFL fantasy football as Week 9 wraps up tonight in Seattle. Pat, I'm curious where you're at. You talk about selling high. Where are you at on the Saints' backfield? And I guess, is it maybe time to sell Tim Hightower, or are you buying into the committee between him and Ingram? Where are you at on the Saints?
Well, I guess since this is the first time I've been on the show, I should probably say I hate Mark Ingram. I don't rank him in my fantasy football rankings. I think he's the absolute worst running back in football. And the best thing about Mark Ingram is yesterday he had a huge game. What was everyone saying about Mark Ingram? Oh, he can't play Mark Ingram. He's in a timeshare. Mark Ingram has his best games when no one expects him to. And he is the lock and load best play of the week. He sucks. And Mark Ingram is the worst. Trade Mark Ingram if you can do that. Tim Hightower has no trade value, unfortunately.
Yeah.
He was a guy that people picked up off the waiver wire last week. He still led the Saints in carries. He led them in snap count. So it's not to say that he's worthless. He's worth having. He played 36 snaps. Ingram only played 33. Clearly, Ingram looked better. But, you know, everyone kind of looks good against San Francisco. They've allowed a 100-yard rusher in six straight games. They're just bleeding points to fantasy running backs. You don't get to play them every week. It's just like how DeJuan Harris doesn't get to play the Saints every week. Yeah. You don't look quite as good in the situation. So next week, the Saints, it's just tough to say. To be perfectly honest with you, it's a situation I would want to avoid. I think it'd be a perfect time to sell Mark Ingram coming off such a big game. You can make the case to someone and you're like, hey, this has been Ingram's job all year. You don't need to let them know about the snap counts because that would work against you. So just throw that off the table. Tell them not to read my column. That would work out much better for your trading Mark Ingram help.
Mm-hmm.
You go, hey, he scored 2 touchdowns. He just broke off a 75-yard run. Of course, this job is his. Give me all you got. And then you get rid of Mark Ingram right now, set yourself up for the playoff run, you'll be good to go.
I have Mark Ingram on my roster, so this might be a perfect time for me to go ahead and sell high because I'm with you. He's been very disappointing and very frustrating, and I, you know, I'm certainly, you know, beginning to be more in your camp of this guy just sucks, and we'll see what happens moving forward. But that's an interesting situation to watch.
You know what you should do? Here's the move. Here's a move for you to do. Do you also own Doug Martin in that league by chance?
I do not. I own Jordan Howard, though.
Oh, that's good news. Jordan Howard is very good.
I also own Frank Gore and Jonathan Stewart.
Oh, you went for like the old man running back.
Well, it's funny because I've got A.J. Green, Michael Crabtree, and Allen Robinson as well.
Oh, so you must have been feeling pretty good about Allen Robinson yesterday for the first time in weeks.
Yeah, I was about to trade him, too, so.
No, you can't be trading low on Allen Robinson.
No.
Especially with who suffered a concussion yesterday, you're going to be fine. But with Mark Ingram, I would say go find the Doug Martin owner in your league. And Doug Martin's value has basically hit an all-time low. We don't know when he's coming back from a hamstring injury. It could be this week. It could be 2 weeks from now. But as long as he's back by week 14, it doesn't really matter. He plays the same twice in the fantasy playoffs. So he's very valuable, and no one is valuing him right now. So you take your Ingram, you go to the Doug Martin owner and find equivalent value for Mark Ingram and make that deal, whether you think that is, I don't even know at this point. Mark Ingram, people value him more than I do. So actually a decent player, let's say. Let's say they have like Michael Thomas of the Saints, who's incredible, probably a top 10 receiver for the rest of the year. So I'm going to go and get him and then get them to throw in Doug Martin as a piece along with it. You get a 2-for-1 trade and get Doug Martin back. I think that's the kind of move you want to make.
I like that. I like that a lot. We'll continue along. Pat Mayo is our guest on the South Street Burger Guest Hotline. He's on the show from now until the end of the NFL season, talking fantasy every Monday morning, helping us out. And you just put out a piece talking Week 10 pickups. And I like your number one because I'm curious. The Green Bay offense, I think we're probably coming to an end of the Ty Montgomery thing. What are you looking at with the Green Bay backfield? Because I see your 1-2 are very curious. One is James Starks, and number two is a guy that maybe some people have been hanging on all year, waiting for Deion Lewis to come back. What about those two guys?
It's time for Deion Lewis. He got into the practice field over the bye week. He could be back this week. I don't know if I'd start with him this week,
right,
but I definitely want him on my team just in case he morphs back into that Deion Lewis we saw for the first 6 weeks last year. If James Starks has been this good and productive, fantasy-wise at least, inside the Patriots offense with LeGarrette Blount scoring all the touchdowns, you know how good Deion Lewis is going to be. Deion Lewis is like 3 times as good as James White.
Yeah.
He's like kind of sucks. Then Deion Lewis does not. He is excellent. Now, Gallo is someone you'll get. Game starts is an interesting situation because this is more speculative than anything, because Green Bay might not switch away from Ty Montgomery and Randall Cobb in the backfield. Montgomery's actually looked okay. He played running back in college for a bit. He looks like a runner. It's weird to see a guy carrying the ball out of the backfield during 88. Just optically, that doesn't really work in my mind, but he's been good. And fantasy-wise, he's really delivered over and over because he's getting a lot of easy receptions out of the backfield. But they cut Miles Davis earlier in the week, who, weirdly enough, got signed by the Jets, cut by the Jets, and signed by the Chiefs, and ended up on the field Sunday, which was just bizarre to see.
Yeah.
But they cut their one running back they just traded for. The only other guy on their roster they really use as a running back is Don Jackson. Don Jackson played 13 snaps out of, like, 70 yesterday. They are not using Don Jackson. That's not going to change anytime soon. James Starks actually practiced this week, despite not playing for the first time in 3 weeks. He's dealing with a knee injury, but he could return for week 10. If he comes back, there's a chance that he's just your starting running back and playing the role that Eddie Lacy played. So no one wants James Starks. Everyone's forgotten about James Starks. And I can't guarantee you this happens with James Starks. But that path to him seeing 15 to 20 touches a game, with Aaron Rodgers playing quarterback in front of him, getting a lot of easy receptions, a lot of easy yardage, the path is there for it. And, I mean, you just list off your running backs. You're actually doing that right. Most people are not in a good running back situation like you are. They need running backs, especially one that touches the ball. Because, you know, you're playing these guys like Bilal Powell. They touch the ball, you know, 11 times a game. Sometimes, oh, great, 3 times a game. Thanks for the 1 point. Mm-hmm. James Starks has the potential to be a workhorse guy for you. James Starks isn't great. That's also somewhat of the problem. But if he's going to get 20 touches, it doesn't matter. Just through volume and through attrition, he's going to pile up fantasy points. And he's available in like 80% of leagues. And everyone's dropped him. Everyone's forgot about him. Don't be the person who forgets about James Starks. Remember the name. Don't spend a lot of fab money on him. You don't need to use your waiver priority. You could probably pick him up as a free agent on Wednesday if you have to. James Starks is going to be a calculated move coming down the stretch of someone that could lead you to the fantasy playoffs.
Okay, two more for you. The first one, I'm curious your opinion, because we saw what he did in his rookie year, and he had everybody with their jaws on the floor, and this year it hasn't been so much, and part of that is because of how dreadful that offense is. But where are you at right now on Todd Gurley?
Todd Gurley, it's funny. The case I just spelled out for James Starks about a guy that gets, you know, 15-plus carries, 2 or 3 catches a game,
yep,
just kind of piles up fantasy points. That's Todd Gurley this year. That's not what you drafted when you drafted Todd Gurley. You thought he'd be the best running back in football, but this is the guy that he's turned into. I mean, he's averaging just over 3 yards a carry. Like, that's brutal.
Yep.
And weirdly enough, it's affected the rest of the offense in a positive way for fantasy-wise. I mean, the offense got awful. But with Case Keenum, like, Lance Kendricks is getting 12 targets a game because Todd Gurley, he had a season-long run yesterday of 17 yards. It's Todd Gurley. He's a fringe top 10 guy just because of volume. There are, like I mentioned, there are so few running backs that get 20-plus touches a game, and he still is a guy, even in a bad offense, who gets all the carries between the 20s, all the carries inside the 20, all the goal line work and all the receiving work. You just don't find a running back who's as active in his team's offense like Todd Gurley. So despite the fact that the skill set isn't quite what we thought it was going to be, the production isn't there, he's still an RB2, and an RB2 is a guy that can become an RB1 in a hurry if he starts scoring touchdowns.
Last one for you. I know the guy in Dallas has been pretty popular in terms of Ezekiel Elliott, but I'm curious your midseason MVP, because for me, just because of the year he had last year and kind of the complete opposite when it comes to touchdowns, my MVP right now would be Melvin Gordon.
Oh, I'm going to say my MVP is Mike Evans. Mike Evans.
Okay,
people said he could draft Mike Evans. He only scored 3 touchdowns last year. How could he ever possibly score more than that? Well, now he leads the league in receiving touchdowns. He has the most targets, as is expected, coming into the year. He's been an absolute beast. Melvin Gordon has been really good, but, you know, I didn't tell people to draft Melvin Gordon. I told them to draft Mike Evans, so I gotta stand in my corner with that one, but you might be right. But both of them have been excellent. And you just see, it's all a volume game when it comes to fantasy football. You can have the guys on your favorite team that you like, big deal. It doesn't matter if you actually want to win. You can have guys on great teams. You can pick up all the Patriots you want. The Patriots aren't always the best for fantasy football outside of Gronk and Brady. The other guys, you know, it's a week-to-week thing. Mike Evans is the only good receiver on his team. They throw him the ball 15 times a game. Even if he has a bad game, he has a good fantasy game. Same as Melvin Gordon. There's no one coming in to steal Melvin Gordon carries.
Yeah.
They get in the 5-yard line, they give it to him 3 times in a row, and he'll score touchdowns off of it. It's that safety and easy projectability that really limits the range of outcomes a player can have on a week-to-week basis. You cut out that variance, you find a really good fantasy player, and that's something that people just don't look at.
Pat, this has been fun. Appreciate it. Looking forward to this from now until the end of the season. Been a lot of fun. Thanks for doing this, man.
But you're not going to be here next week?
I'll be here next week. One more.
All right, well, you need to let me know if that trade works. You send me a screenshot of the team with Doug Martin. We'll cook up a trade for you.
Sounds good. Excellent. Thanks for your time, man.
All right, see you later.
That's Pat Mayo from the Fantasy Sports Network. A lot of fun. He's going to be on board every Monday in this time slot. You need help at Fantasy, let us know at 960-960. Perhaps your question could be in next week to the one and only Pat Mayo. You can follow him on Twitter at the PME. He does some work for RotoWorld as well, so go check him out. He's got his article up right now for Week 10 pickups. If you're looking for the waiver wire help, you got the bye weeks happening, go check him out on Twitter, at the PME. Pat Mayo from the Fantasy Sports Network will join us every Monday at 9:45.